Welcome to the Community Voice Program. I'm your host, Luke Lugert, on this Tuesday, and it's, I guess we'll call it a Tanner Tuesday, because we often like to bring Tanner on Tuesdays to talk about health issues in particular. And this week, we have a guest. Purity, I don't believe you've ever been on this program before.
No, I haven't.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the Community Voice. We're very excited to have you. And Purity Upson is with us today. She is an inpatient nurse manager at Willowbrook at Tanner, which is Tanner's mental health facility, for those who do not know. And they work with all sort of mental health conditions. And we're very excited to have you on and to speak about a particular aspect of mental health. And in particular, July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about this month and why it is important to recognize minority mental health.
Well, it is important because we do know minorities usually do not seek mental health treatment. And because of all the stigma, there is stigma around mental health anyway for the whole population, but especially minorities. You know, it's never talked about. So it was started in 2008 to start changing the stigma around mental illness and mental treatment in the minority community, because it's already a problem anyway, but even more so in these communities.
And why is it a stigma more among minority communities? And I'm assuming you're specifically speaking about African-American, Hispanic, Asian-American, mm-hmm. Native American communities.
Some of these is already cultural. It's a cultural thing about they don't want to talk about it. Is ingrained in the way they were brought up, is ingrained in the places that they come from. Some of these are immigrants, also from other countries. In those countries where they come from, is a big deal. They don't talk about it, or it's treated differently. So it's a combination of things. And when it comes to even accessing health here for the African Americans and the Asians, they don't want to talk about that, because if I go to the hospital, somebody's going to see and think something's wrong with me, I might lose my job. So all those things make them not seek help. And that's why it's a big deal, because it's all cultural, and they're afraid.
And then they're afraid to specifically access it. And one thing, I was given some statistics by Tanner, and as we look across the board, across numerous ethnicities, 16.3% of Hispanic adults live with a mental condition, 19.3% of white, 18.6% of black adults, 13.9% of Asian adults. All of that is relatively similar. We do have a huge spike. 28.3% of Native Americans and Native Alaskans are living with a mental health condition. Why do we see that spike?
I think with the Native Americans, just even the way they live in the U.S., they're isolated, obviously. They live in their reservations all by themselves. We do know statistically there's a big issue with addictions that is well documented. And I think part of that, the fact that they're isolated, even when they're not in the reservations and they're among the general population, they still don't trust the system to go to and seek mental. So they talk among themselves and they don't want to seek help. So it's going to perpetuate having this. And because they do have a propensity for mental illness within the genetics, especially for alcoholism, so their kids are going to have that genetic component. So it's easy for them to be addicts. Mm-hmm. So with that, and they still don't seek help, so that's going to continue until we get out of that and start to seek treatment.
And you mentioned alcoholism. Do you, as a mental health professional, do you see substance abuse linked heavily with mental health conditions?
Absolutely. They go hand in hand. Not necessarily, you're going to see a lot of bipolar and substance abuse. So they go hand in hand. Depression, because people try to medicate themselves. That's how it starts, really. Like, I don't feel good. I'm depressed. Let me have this beer so I can go to sleep. That's where it starts, and then it goes from there. And they usually go hand in hand. Not necessarily, you can be an addict without having bipolar or depression, mm-hmm. but they do go hand in hand.
You do see a lot of links between mental health conditions. And We are talking about substance abuse and mental health conditions. Tell us some of the most common mental health conditions that you are seeing at Willowbrook at Tanner.
Oh, we see everything from depression is a big one, including teenagers. We know at Willowbrook we do have a children unit, a lot of depression, self-harming behaviors, anxiety problems, bipolar disorders, schizoaffective disorders, schizophrenia, and it runs through the gamut of those. So it's quite a bit. We see all of it.
And obviously depression is probably one of the leading ones. Yes. That you see quite a bit of. And you mentioned isolationism, and specifically in the Native American community. Do you think that the fact that there is a stigma, particularly amongst minority communities, that feeling of isolation leads to more depression?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you don't, I'm going to talk, especially for migrants. I'm a migrant, so that particularly I can talk about from Africa.
Okay.
We tend to go to the places where our groups are. So if I'm from Ghana, for instance, I'm going to try to come to America and go where a Ghanaian group is.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a problem, I just ask for help among the group because I'm afraid to ask somebody else because I went to this group and isolated myself in that group. So, and they would know what's available for me. So I don't want to step outside of that group. So it continues the isolation of these groups because that's why they tend to go among themselves and don't venture out because they're afraid to venture out because you don't know what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it perpetuates the same issue.
And so what would you say to somebody who is a minority, who is in one of these groups, whether it is Hispanics or maybe even somebody who has moved from Africa? What do you say to somebody who might be listening right now and is suffering from some sort of mental health condition? What's the first step that they can take to seek help?
Seek help, for sure. Those numbers that you see on TV, they do work. I'm saying that because a lot of people watch TV. They're able to see those numbers on the caption. That's number one if you haven't been able to see something someplace else. Seek help. Go to the hospital. Tell your doctor. If you go to the ER and you have a cough, also tell them that you're depressed. So they're not. That's the only way, and then you're going to be able to get access to help. Those are the conversations that we are trying to, bring out there, that ask for help. Help is there. There is treatment.
Mm-hmm.
There is treatment for all these conditions. You don't have to live and suffer because there is treatment, and treatment does work.
And in some of the material that I was sent from Tanner, it goes over the fact that African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Asian Americans are way less likely to seek out mental health services. How can Tanner, and specifically Willowbrook at Tanner, really kind of, I guess, send an olive branch to those minority communities to make sure that they realize, like, you are welcome here?
Well, I do know we've done quite a bit at Tanner anyway with advertising to the community. When we have walks in the community, we've done that to bring mental health awareness. We put on our T-shirts when we walk around the streets. Believe it or not, those mental health awareness T-shirts you see us wearing at Kroger and Walmart is very important to us because we've had conversations like, I like your T-shirt. Let's talk about that. We talk about mental health and mental treatment. So those types of things, I do know Tanner and Willowbrook in particular are very involved in that. And having a talk, a radio show like this, getting information out there that it is something that we are interested in, it is something that we are passionate about, and there is access at Willowbrook, both inpatient and outpatient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another big deal. Some people don't want to come to inpatient because they have to work, and they don't want to be seen in an inpatient setting. But we do have outpatient programs. So seek help is not, because there's also outpatient programs you can go to. There are physicians you can be referred to. So don't be afraid to seek help because you think you're going to be institutionalized. Because sometimes that's the fear.
Absolutely.
There are all kinds of ways you can get treatment without being in an inpatient setting.
And we are sitting down with Miss Purity Upson. She is the inpatient nurse manager at Willowbrook at Tanner. We're going to be back talking more about Minority Mental Health Awareness Month in just a little bit after we take a break and hear a message from our sponsors, Oakmont Academy and Tanner Health System.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
A well-rounded education includes much more than just academics. At Oak Mountain Academy, we encourage our students to find their niche in any of our 42 co-curricular opportunities. Over the past 5 years, we have brought home 5 state and 20 regional athletic titles. Our one-act play and literary teams continuously compete at the region and state level, and our academic teams bring home first place more than not. We are warriors creating legacies. To learn more, visit oakmountain.us.
Welcome back to the Community Voice program. I'm your host, Luke Lukert, and we are sitting down with Miss Purity Upson, an inpatient nurse manager at Willow Brook at Tanner, talking about Minority Mental Health Awareness Month in particular and access to mental health for minorities in the Carroll County and surrounding West Georgia community. And before we dive back into that subject, Miss Upson, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your experiences at Willow Brook.
Well, I've been at Willow Brook for about 8 years. I moved here from Florida, followed my husband at a job. So I worked a little bit at the Carroll County Jail. Wasn't too crazy about that, but nothing wrong with the jail itself.
There are neighbors right over
exactly.
there.
Exactly. But then I ended up at Willow Brook in 2008. So I've been a nurse there, RN, for quite a number of years. And then the last 3 years or so, I've been a nurse manager for one of the units, which is a dual diagnosis unit. Dual diagnosis means both substance abuse and mental illness. So my unit combines both.
And what attracted you into getting into mental health, to be a mental health professional?
I've done that for 15 years. I've been a nurse for 21 years, but 15 of those in mental health. I just found it fascinating. You know, there is nothing more fascinating to me than human behavior. How do we get there? How do we interact? Relationships. That is what really that is all about. And how can you impact, you know, that part of medicine, which at the time was very misunderstood. And obviously, everybody has a story. I've had a cousin at home. He's long past now, but he was schizophrenic. But growing up, I didn't know what, I just knew he ran around naked and hated my mom. That's all I knew about that. So when I started understanding mental illness, I thought, oh, that's what was happening to my cousin. Well, I was not able to help him, but I thought I can help someone else.
And mental illness is something that fascinates me because it is hard to diagnose, and it is something that there is a stigma around it. And unlike cancer or heart disease, you know, you don't feel ashamed when you are diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
You feel ashamed. A lot, there is a shame that is put with being diagnosed with depression or bipolarity or anything like that. And I think that that is an interesting aspect of our healthcare system. Can you speak a little bit more about stigmas and about how that really impacts treatment for mental health conditions?
It's like I tell my patients, when you're diagnosed with depression or mental illness, think about it just like you've been diagnosed with high blood pressure or diabetes. It is like any other diagnosis. But because we haven't talked about it, when your psychiatrist tells you you got mental illness, they don't sit down and say what it is and think about it this way. Think about it like any other illness. It's just like you got depression. Let's go figure this stuff. Here is a medicine. Sometimes they don't tell you what the medicines are for, what the side effects are. So the patients are trying to figure this on their own. And before they get there, their families have been seeing things. And that's part of the problem. They see something is not quite right with Joe, but they go through the, oh, he's just a phase. They don't realize Joe is actually having bipolar manic episode. They just think, oh, that's just Joe. He's going to go past the phases. If you see your son is drinking, oh, it's just a phase. Then you, by the time you realize it's become an addiction. So that's the part of the problem. We start from very culturally thinking there is nothing to it, mm-hmm. but phases of life, without understanding this could be really a mental illness. Then when the issue is so big and we go to the psychiatrist or the doctor, first we go to the regular doctor. We go to your family practitioner. Mm-hmm. They don't understand mental illness. So the first treatment is not even with the correct practitioner, is with your local person that has been treating your kids since they were, you know, since they were born.
Who also treats for the flu.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they're not the experts until something major really happens down the road, so many years down the road. So I'll say it's difficult because it takes a long time thinking it was phases and all that.
Now, how important is getting the full cooperation of a patient for treating mental health conditions? Because like if somebody is diagnosed with diabetes, making sure that patient follows the correct diet and making sure that patient understands like, oh, this diet is going to save my life if I follow it. I imagine it's very similar with mental health conditions. You have to have the patient buy into the fact mm-hmm. that it is treatable. And if they follow that treatment, no matter, you know, if they feel bad about it a week later, that it will actually impact their lives. So how important is cooperation from a patient?
Very, very important. But it also goes with education. It's very difficult to have a patient cooperate if they don't have the facts. The education is paramount from the practitioner or the nurse needs to educate the patient and the family, really, because mental illness affect the whole entire family. So that's why it's bigger than just diabetes, because diabetes, you can educate the person. But that's also too needs education. But you have to educate the family because it's going to affect the whole part. And I think that's the part that's missed. And continuous education, because if they don't understand, they're not going to be compliant with the medicine. Because you give them medicine for a month, they feel good, because they do feel good, and then they stop. They forget that this is actually a chronic illness that you have to deal with sometimes for the rest of your life. So continued education and bringing family in.
And you speak about bringing family in and educating the family. Say that there is a family member, somebody listening right now does have a family member that they think is suffering from some sort of mental health condition, whether it's depression or bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, anything like that. What would you say to a family member that would be useful advice to encourage that other family member to seek mental health treatment?
I would say to that family, number one, seek help for your loved one that mm-hmm. you think something is not quite right. But also understand the disease yourself, because that's a long, drawn illness. And it comes and goes, and different things affect the family. So as a family, draw together and support this person. Not only are you going to support your loved one, but find help to support you, because that's a long road. So rally around your person and understand the disease is going to be a long, drawn process, and everybody's going to be involved. And also, if you're overwhelmed because there's family burnout and all that that comes along with mental illness, seek help yourself. There is nothing wrong with going for therapy and saying, I am exhausted. There is nothing wrong with getting another family get involved, like, give me a week off. If I'm living with this person for the rest of my life, can I get a week off so I can get a break? Don't feel anything wrong with that and feel, I'm disregarding my loved one. It's okay to get help, because it takes a toll on the rest of the family.
Absolutely. And I want to get back to a minority mental health in particular. You mentioned to me off air about one particular scenario that I found very interesting, and it was from groups from Kenya. Mm-hmm. And they come to America and are usually highly educated, coming to West Georgia, going to Morehouse mm-hmm. for medical school. And they are, some of them are suffering from mental health conditions, and the family doesn't understand. Can you address that a little bit more?
I've seen that at Witherbrook a couple of times, and it's the families don't understand, how is this intelligent person who's at university, about to graduate from medical school, how can they have a mental breakdown? And the thing for these families is that mental illness doesn't care whether you're highly educated, IQ test, whether you're rich or poor, affects every single person. So the biggest thing is actually denial for the family. Just like any other disease, if you're diagnosed with something, the first thing you're going to think like, oh, no. And I think that's why they go through. And seeking treatment for these individuals has been extremely difficult, because not only is the person doesn't want treatment because they believe they're too smart to be mentally ill, but the family as well is in denial and does not also want to give them treatment because they're afraid the medicines will mess up with their brain and they're not going to be perform as well in school. So those are two dual things that you're having to convince and educate not only the individual but also the family that, yes, they do need this treatment. This treatment is important and is actually going to help them with, if they are compliant, also they can go back to school, but they don't get that piece. So it's been very challenging having to have a lot of family sessions. We've had these types of individuals. We have lots of family sessions to educate whether the physicians are involved, the therapists are involved, the nurses involved, to bring the family to say, support your person, is going to be okay, they need treatment.
And we are sitting down with Purity Upson, the inpatient nurse manager at Willowbrook at Tanner, discussing minority mental health and mental health in general. It is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month for all of July. We'll be back in just a little bit to close out our discussion after we hear messages from our sponsors, Oak Mountain Academy and Tanner Health System.
At Oak Mountain Academy, our daily schedule includes convocation, prayer, and the Pledge of Allegiance. By doing so, we build a family-like community where all students grow and flourish and personal faith is encouraged. Through community service and a historical approach to biblical study, our students are taught the value of the warrior way, honesty, respect, and responsibility. Oak Mountain Academy, we are a family creating legacies. To learn more, visit oakmountain.us.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama. Because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
Welcome back to the Community Voice program here on News Talk 1330 FM 106.3 WLBB. We are sitting down with Ms. Purity Upson, the inpatient nurse manager at Willowbrook at Tanner. Very excited to have you with us. And we're speaking particularly about Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And one minority, or several minorities, are not English speakers.
Yeah.
And not natural English speakers. Maybe they speak a little bit of English, or maybe none at all. And I can imagine access to mental health care is very difficult for those folks, because unlike a lot of other health screenings where You can get a blood lab done and be like, okay, you have this. Mental health is very much dependent on talking to somebody and getting their symptoms from just their mouth. I mean,
yeah.
So I imagine it's very difficult. How do you address that?
We've had several cases. We still, I mean, we have a large Hispanic community here. So that's our number one big group that doesn't speak English that we've seen at Willowbrook. It's very, very difficult, especially, and there are two things that affects this particular group. They cannot speak English, so they're not able to express themselves. Sometimes they'll come for an assessment. The assessment is misinterpreted because the few words that they have, they're not able to express exactly the emotions and everything else. So there's that part that even for us English speakers don't understand that, so we misinterpret what they're saying. So that's problem number one. And then when we actually admit them, it's also another big issue but what we've done at Willowbrook, we have interpretation services. We have to provide that, obviously. But even with an interpretation services, it's still a third party that you're dealing with. So they don't see the body language that you have and the emotions. And so that becomes difficult. But what we've attempted and done a good job at Willowbrook, our Spanish-speaking staff do an interpretation course that TANA provides. And that, to me, I find is the most important piece, because they're able to sit with the physician, one-on-one with the physician and the patient, and they're able to read what's going on and interpret for the patient. That's a big deal. And in terms of the patient themselves, they feel comfortable because now here is a person just like me, speaks like me, thinks like me, mm-hmm. who's in this building. So they actually feel comfortable, and they'll seek them out even when they want something as simple as soup. They want that Spanish-speaking person to bring them soup. And we obliged, obviously, no matter what. If they want to speak with you, to give them soap, that's what we do. We make sure that happens. So we do have several Spanish-speaking people at Willowbrook, not just for that, but it helps when it comes when we have a Spanish-speaking patient. Now, when we have an English-speaking child with a family that's not in the building, that doesn't speak English,
mm-hmm.
because that's another... And when it comes to children, everything has to be dealt with through the family.
Yeah.
Because they are the guardians. So with that, it is very important also to have someone interpreting what they're saying. So we have an interpreter sitting there on the phone, listening to the mother or the father and interpreting that to the rest of the group. So those are the dynamics that we encounter at Willowbrook.
And I imagine it is difficult for a Spanish speaker or somebody who does not speak English very well to share their problems with two parties.
Yes.
Not only do you have to involve a counselor or a doctor, you also have to involve an interpreter. So you have to share your experience that you might not be comfortable with two people. So I imagine that's very difficult in and of itself. And especially, as you said, with children, that there's a whole nother added layer of, absolutely have to involve the parents.
Yeah.
We have about a minute left here in the program. I'm going to give that minute to you. Address somebody in the minority community who might be suffering from mental health condition. What should they do today to get better?
Just to let you know that mental health affects every single person. It doesn't discriminate whether you're from, whether you're white, black, yellow. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter how much education you have. It hits people across the board. And for any minority, seek help. Help is there for all of us to access. There is actually more access in America than any other place on the planet when it comes to mental illness. So there is help, and the help actually does work. There are other places, once you get in the system and access help, you'll be set up in other places on the community that is close to you, within your churches that you are not even aware of, that TANA and Willowbrook is aware of, that we can send you there. So you have someone close to home. But the best thing to do is access first, and then you're able to see what else is out there for you to continue.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Upton. And that was a Community Voice here on WLBB. Have a great rest of the day.